Watch out. It's another episode of the Negative Positives Podcast coming to you from Los Angeles, the City of Angels, La La Land, California. It's everyone's favorite co-captain, Andre Dominguez.
Welcome back to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 258. I'm your co-host, Andre Dominguez, coming at you a little creaky voiced and sore from the City of Angels with another solo show. The first thing that I want to kind of talk about, a little explanation as to my absence on the Monday show. We at CineStill have just started the process of moving offices over from one section of Hollywood to, you know, a few blocks away to a different section of Hollywood. And this whole kind of moving stuff and carrying heavy boxes and being surrounded by lots of dust and cardboard has left my throat feeling pretty horrible. It has been fun overall moving into the new place. It's obviously much bigger. It's going to give us a lot more space. I finally have a desk and I'm no longer working on a couch, which is great. But I did have to kind of prioritize on Monday, getting our storage unit emptied and moving the vast majority of our things from the old office to the new. So I ended up not being able to make it on the show in time. The first kind of main topic that I had prepared for this solo show that I wrote down in my notes a few weeks ago was just a continued update on my experiences with the HP printer and the HP Instant Ink program. I did actually just receive this afternoon when I came back from home. This is already my second shipment of the ink. So the first one that came in, which came with the Instant Ink program when I first signed up, was the color in black and white. I've just received another package of the black and white that I ran out of. Still have a decent bit more color, but so far it's actually been working really well. You do need to make sure that you have the printer plugged in and connected to the internet so it can be constantly monitoring the ink levels and letting HP know when you need more ink. If you're just kind of pulling it out every once in a while, plugging it in, HP's not going to know how much ink you're actually using, and so it's not going to know when to send you the ink so that you have it when you need it. So that's been going pretty well. I think I've printed so far, the last time I checked the software, I believe about 54 or 55 out of my 100 sheets. So I'm going strong. Haven't been doing them in as long of these kind of late night printing sessions as I used to. As Mike has said multiple times, it's best to kind of let the prints air out a little bit so that they don't kind of smudge and sort of off gas whatever it is that these dyes are giving off. It's not something that I've noticed. I haven't been sitting there at my desk feeling lightheaded after printing a bunch and there's kind of prints all around me, but I definitely, do just want to get in the habit of, every other day, every couple days, opening up a new folder in the hard drive, just kind of taking a poke around and finding something new to print. And overall, it's been really fun. So the HP Ink program is going strong. As soon as I'm done with these 100 sheets, I'm going to put an order for either. I'm not sure whether or which one I want to go for, because Mike has had great results with the Kodak Professional Luster paper, but I also saw Junior Wyatt's results with the Ilford Pearl inkjet paper. So they're both kind of in that luster, like not matte, not glossy type finish that I really like. And so I don't know, I'm not sure which one I'm gonna get just yet. But so far, I've really been enjoying the process, and hopefully should be sending out some prints soon. Still haven't made it over to the post office to, you know. I do have the stiff cardboard mailers now with the adhesive thing. And they're pretty hard to bend once you actually put a print in them. I already have some that I've already, you know, put the typewritten message on the back, written to people, signed them, put them in the mailers. I haven't yet gotten a chance to go over to the post office and calculate how much postage I need. So we'll probably figure that out this weekend. The other thing kind of print-wise that I wanted to talk about was this idea of sort of, you know, what is your ideal print size? The whole, you know, concept of printing in the darkroom and making these big, large prints, and you're spending a lot of time, you know, making test trips. I love all of that stuff. Granted, the largest I've ever printed was 8x10 in the darkroom that I had at my university. But, and I am excited to eventually get the darkroom situation and the enlarger set up in the new darkroom at the Cinestill office. But for the time being, right now, my ideal print size really kind of has been 4x6 or 5x7 with a thin white border. There's something that's been so much fun about having these small print sizes, making it easier, which in my case has been done through the HP Instant Ink program. But even kind of looking back a few months ago when I had set up my 35mm enlarger, just kind of taking a look at the negative itself, you know, not moving anything, just kind of slightly focusing, and just popping off a test print without even making a test strip, and just making a few little adjustments in terms of, you know, putting in a filter or, you know, increasing the time slightly. The ability, for me at least so far, the ability to make a large number of small size prints has really lent the 4x6 or 5x7 print size a lot of favor in my book. There is also the fact that they're much easier to send to people. Going back a long while, I remember saying that for like street photography purposes, both to kind of show people what kind of photography you're doing, especially if you're gonna be doing like a street portrait, which kind of helps sort of build some rapport or credibility or convince them to allow you to take their picture, or, you know, if it's a situation where anybody's kind of getting angry, where you can kind of pull out a print and, you know, show them that, like, hey, I take pictures of, you know, buildings. I'm not trying to kind of like creep on anybody. Or be shady for whatever reason. I'm just taking pictures with my wide-angle lens of interesting buildings and architecture. The ability to kind of pull out a print for any of those reasons is actually really cool, and it's going to be much easier to do that with a 4x6 or a 5x7 than it will be for an 8x10. Now, on the opposite side of that, my recent return to printing does make me really want to start printing large. Going through this process of picking out prints and going through the hard drives to look for little prints to send to friends in the community has really made me, you know, allowed me to find some, dare I say, kind of hidden gems in my photographic history of the past like 5-6 years. And it's made me look at some images that I had kind of discounted in the past in a new light, and made me want to, now that I'm like kind of looking at these little 4x6s or 5x7s, really made me want to print some of these photos large and put them on my wall. Now, obviously, anybody who's starting to get into these different print sizes will have to kind of learn a little bit about the different aspect ratios. And I just basically Googled the other day, you know, which standard print sizes maintain the 3x2 aspect ratio of your normal 35mm negative, which these days is what I shoot the most. I do really like medium format, in particular 6x6. I no longer own a 6x9 camera, never have owned, nor do I particularly like the 6x7 format, and I don't currently own a 6.45 either. So moving forward, you know, I'm kind of in that position right now where I'm not even sure the next time that I place an order for paper that I want to buy 8x10, because I know that I'm gonna have to crop in quite a bit for 35mm. And so I'm leaning towards, you know, on the high volume stuff, the just fun stuff, sending to friends, making a little photo album, putting in my camera bag. I want to kind of stick with the 4x6, and most of those be ones that come out of the HP printer. But on the other side, you know, it's been about, what, 7, almost 8 months here that I've been in LA. My walls in my apartment are still completely bare. I would like at some point to put some artwork on there, and I'm increasingly leaning towards large print sizes that maintain that 3x2 aspect ratio. I do have here just a little screenshot that I took of that little Google search that I was doing, and the print sizes that maintain that 3x2 aspect ratio are obviously 4x6, 6x9, 8x12, 10x15, 16x14, 20x30, or 24x36. Now, I don't think that I will probably be doing 24x36, but I want to see if I can, you know, do something just in general larger. It doesn't have to be exactly these, because I know that there's going to be limitations, but I do want to see if I can try to print something larger, maintain that, or as close to that 3x2 aspect ratio as possible, and finally get some stuff up on my walls. Naturally, that's not going to be with the HP printer, but we do have access at the studio to some really, you know, good quality, what are they called? Pigment, is it pigment or dye? I can never remember. Whichever one is the more archival one, not particularly that I care about the archivability of some prints that are going to be on my wall and my wall alone. I'm not putting photos in a gallery or anything like that. Just kind of things to decorate my walls here at the apartment. But we do have access to some good printers at the studio, so once those finally get set up, I want to do something like that. And on the potential kind of long term, there may be a chance that we might get an 8x10 enlarger at some point. So it would be interesting to make some large darkroom prints. I don't know how affordable that would be, in that I would have to buy my own paper, or how possible that would be to make really large prints in our darkroom, but we'll see. I think that, you know, for me, darkroom prints are gonna be in that, like, probably in that, like, 5x7 to 8x10 size, most likely. Anything smaller than 5x7, I would probably just do in the HP. Anything larger than 8x10, I would probably use, like, a professional inkjet, whichever one is available to me. All right, so I think that's pretty much it for the first topic that I had, you know, ready to go. So I'm going to hand it over to a call-in that we have from Jason Preeb. And instead of being a call-in camera review, Jason is going to be talking about a camera strap. Big reminder to all of you out there, I know that we often call it call-in camera review, but we can really, really talk about anything that you guys want, be it a camera, a strap, any other kind of accessory, a printer that you're enjoying using, as long as it's something that you think that the rest of us would be interested in. So let's hand it over to Jason, and we will be back in a sec.
Hi, Mike. This is Jason Preeby calling with a call-in camera review that is not about cameras, and answering the call for something that is other than cameras. I've been meaning to do some sort of a call-in review, and I'll probably do some on cameras in the future. I'm a fan of the show. I've been listening really since about show 200, so I'm fairly new, and I really enjoy what you and Andre have got going on. I want to talk today about camera straps, which is maybe a little boring, but it's I've found every camera needs something to secure it to you. And even though I've noticed some of the newer shooters like to just forego having a camera strap, they actually come in handy, not just to secure your camera, but also to make sure you can keep it steady. And I found some that are pretty darn nice. Now, I've gone through a few in my time, but there's kind of a few priorities I have. One is I don't like to spend an awful lot of money on these. In fact, sometimes you can get by with whatever you got that came with the camera when you acquired it, although a lot of times those are kind of worn out. Also, I have a pet peeve about straps that are too narrow on cameras that are heavy. And anybody who's seen kind of the factory default strap that comes on like a Pentax K1000 knows what I'm talking about. I mean, it's narrow, it's made of nylon webbing, and on a heavier camera, that just gets a little uncomfortable. So the three cameras straps I want to talk about, two of which I found on Amazon, that is, and one is on a separate website. The first one is kind of the most stylish one, and I really like putting this one on my nicer cameras, and that's a leather camera neck strap by a company called B-Still, B-Still. And you can find them on Amazon for about $25. They actually had an earlier version that I like even more than the one that's still for sale that was more narrow. It's about 1.5 inches wide leather. It's really sharp. It's probably definitely the most attractive camera strap I have and like to put carry around, one of them. The only drawback is that it's leather, so it's not going to be flexible and comfortable right away. It takes it a while to work in. And it's also got the drawbacks that leather always has. I suppose in the long term, it'll, you know, crack and weaken. The other thing people complain about for these straps are that they actually have some little tabs at the end, actually where you hook the rings on to your camera lugs. And people online are frustrated with getting those to fit over the camera lugs or making them work. Honestly, I found that you can fix that pretty easily with a razor knife, either by cutting the holes a little bigger if you need, or just simply cutting them off. Anyway, a stylish strap does a good job. Next up that I really came across, another strap I really like, is by a company called Hyperion Camera Straps, Hyperion, and you can direct your search engine to find them. These are really cool, stylish straps that I've came across, and I really like their kind of a braided paracord looking strap. They also fit my comfort requirements, and they're also not super expensive, and you know, we're in the $20 range still. What I like about these straps is the way they look is kind of unique. I love being able to kind of color coordinate the straps with whatever's going on with the camera. So like right now, I'm looking at my Olympus OM-1 that I've got a red soft release button on it, and it's a black camera, and then I've got a black and silver braided strap with red bindings on the side. It just looks really sharp. So I like those straps as well. I like to imagine that this company is that they're from Greece, and they claim to make that these things are made by hand. I like to imagine that there's some Greek sailor in a blue and white striped shirt hand braiding these by the ocean. But, you know, I'm sure it's not that way. It's probably made in a sweatshop in China. But they do arrive, you know, in a hand-addressed envelope from Greece. So maybe they are being handmade in Greece. And if they are, that's really even more cool. One thing I'll say about these camera straps is if you order one, be prepared to wait for it. I found about 5 or 6 weeks to get the ones delivered from them. Last but not least, there's another, going back to an Amazon company, this is a $10 camera strap by a company called Egg Snow. It's made out of like a cotton elastic knit that is probably the most comfortable one. It's that I have. It's wide, and that's really comes in handy for a heavier camera, like even your K1000 or something heavier. Like if you've got like a bigger professional version, Nikon or like my Maxim 9, I like having something that's wide, especially in the heat of the summer, which is what we're in now, to spread that weight out so it's not just cutting into your neck if you're wearing a t-shirt. So those are my top three. I'm sure there's more out there, but I figured I'd share kind of what I've come across and what I like. Big fan of the show, and anybody can check out my amateur and poorly developed pictures on Instagram at Jason Preeby. Have a good one. Cheers.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Jason. I do have actually, on this kind of topic of straps, I recently did get a Peak Design, the Peak Design Slide Light for my F100, just because I wanted something a little bit wider to sort of evenly distribute the weight of that camera, plus with that 60 f2.8D macro lens, which is not the smallest in the world. It really does kind of distribute the weight pretty well and adjusts easily. But on the other side, I have developed a little bit of an appreciation for this old, and I don't even know what brand it is, because there's actually no branding on. I can't for the life of me remember where I bought it, but it's this thin black leather strap with red stitching that I bought initially to use with my Leica M6 that I'm going to be very happy to use with the Leica M2 that is coming on its way from the folks over at Retro Photo York. I believe that's what they're called, at least that's what their Instagram handle is. Let me actually look it up right now in order to do them justice and give him a little shout out. I know that Jason Konopinski is actually a friend and customer of theirs. The name is Camera Center of York, although their Instagram handle is indeed retro_photo_York, and they're based out of York, Pennsylvania. Michael, who runs the whole thing there, used to be a purchaser with KEH, and you guys know how much I've been absolutely loving KEH recently. I really do think that I'm going to be, purchasing a decent amount of gear from them moving forward, but I am not at all opposed to supporting some independents and smaller businesses out there. Really, when it comes down to it, a lot of these cameras and lenses that we're buying are not inexpensive things. They're important tools that, for the most part, were built decades ago. Knowing that they work, are reliable, and the service attached to them, the customer service attached to them, is of high quality, is increasingly, the more and more time I spend in this community and in this industry, extremely important to me. I'm no longer really, looking, and also it's because of living here in LA, I'm not really looking for, a deal these days. I'm willing to, pay what I need to in order to have the peace of mind of owning something that I know that is going to work, and if it, breaks immediately after I purchase it, I can rely on the vendor to kind of stay true to their word, have warranties, things like that. So it really is, you're buying the, you're buying the seller. I'm blanking completely on the expression. I think it's that, right? You're buying the seller something. But I've had a great interaction with Michael over at Camera Center of York. He sold me it's a Leica M2 L-CAN, and L-CAN stands for Ernst Lights of Canada. So as far as I am aware, this M2 was indeed manufactured in, is it Midland, Ontario? Ooh, the CCR fellows are gonna give me hell for forgetting that. But same quality construction as the stuff made over in Germany. Button rewind instead of the little lever. No self timer, which I honestly never use anyway. And it was owned by a cinematographer and documentary filmmaker, William Bacon III, who did some interesting stuff, some stuff with Disney earlier in his career, and then went on to make a couple of documentary films on the people in Tibet, just their lifestyle and their culture. So it's really interesting that this this camera has some good provenance to bring in a watch, not exclusively watch, but a common watch term, in the at least in the case of vintage watch collecting. And then after being owned by Mr. Bacon, it was owned by a photojournalist with the Associated Press. So it's just interesting. I have no expectations that my photography will at all be as you know, good or accomplished as theirs, but I really do appreciate the fact that, you know, this camera has been places and it's seen things, and I hope to, in my time on this earth and owning this camera, to take it to many more places and hopefully see some pretty cool things with it, especially because it will be, you know, my daily driver. As you guys know, I've been loving using the F100. I just got back the scans from the first color film watch event photography thing that I did, which was over at Bindi Jewelers in Artesia, California, with the OC Chrono group, essentially the beers and cameras of the watch world down here in Southern California. And I love using it. I really do think that camera is great. However, the size, the weight of the lenses that I enjoy using with it just makes it a little bit less of a daily carry for me, and more of an applied kind of photography. Whereas the M2, being light and kind of trying to restrict myself to just one lens in, at least for the time being, the Voigtlander 35-1.4 Nocton that I have, is really just going to allow me to just take it around with me every day. And I'm really excited. I'm really, really excited for it. I will probably talk a little bit more about it once I get it. It should be coming in the mail tomorrow. So in a couple of weeks when I do my solo show, I'll give a little bit of an update on how I'm enjoying it, how the camera's working, what I've learned after having spent the past about 3 months living without a Leica, and what it's like to go back to that. I'm going to be wrapping this up soon. We're a little over 20 minutes. So the last thing that I do want to give a little bit of an announcement for, in case you guys had not already seen or heard, former guest of the Negative Positives podcast, good friend to the show, and an active member of our little community, Ian Barnaby Nutt, has just recently joined the wonderful Mr. Sven Olaf Humberstedt as a ongoing co-host of the Viewfinder Vikings podcast. Two very fine gentlemen, extremely entertaining to listen to. Admittedly, I'm very behind on Viewfinder Vikings, but I'm really, really excited that Ian is going to be joining. I need to probably download going back a few episodes for sure to listen at the gym to get myself all caught up. And it's really been interesting to see recently the podcasting game changing, solo podcasters, you know, blossoming into duo podcasters. Everybody needs a good co-captain, as long as they're more reliable schedule-wise than I am. But it's really cool to see. It's nice to have, you know, Ed on Grainy Days these days, to see Ian now on Viewfinder Vikings. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope that this does serve as a, you know, a kind of another additional lesson to all of you that podcasting is not difficult. It's not scary. Mike and I don't own fancy microphones or software. We just record straight in Skype, and then record our solo shows on our little voice recorders. plug that audio into the computer, and in my case, email it to Mike, and then he makes me, you know, sound at least semi-passable and slightly entertaining with a little bit of background music as I ramble on and on for several minutes. But yes, with that, folks, I will tie everything up here. Of course, you can see my film and watch photography on Instagram at AndreOnFilm. Be sure to email this podcast at negpositives@gmail.com with any of your questions, call-in camera, or any other thing, review. Join the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group to keep up to date with all of our personal projects, inside jokes, and general hilariosity of our wonderful listeners. And last but not least, be sure to follow Negative Positives on Instagram, run of course by our friend of the show, Bryce Randall, and do try to use the hashtag #NegativePositives so that Bryce can share your images with the rest of us. With that, everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. Take care.
Gutter Man Cave Production!